There is an eerie ring to the news that a few banks in the United States have gone under. And immediately the US federal regulators stepped in to protect them, or at least to protect depositors. Stocks in some US banks have continued to plunge despite President Joe Biden's attempt to reassure Americans their money is safe after the collapse of the Silicon Valley Bank. And hey presto, the taxpayer bails out the wealthy again. What does this move reveal? What will the knock-on effects be? Well, Marcel von Pfeiffer is the Chief Investment Officer of the Arminius Capital ALPS Fund. He's a hedge fund manager. I spoke to him today discussing this and asked him, is this simply history repeating itself? This is what he said.
Yeah, it is, Steve. And again, it's not even antiquated history. This is, SVB has pursued the business model that not only blew up Lehman Brothers in 2008, but they have embarked on the same type of business model, which we can dig into, that the UK pension funds who pursued the liability-driven investments blew themselves up with in September last year, September 2022. So, this is absolutely and completely history repeating themselves. As I said, the business model of SVB has been tried and tested before, and it failed at every single gate and effectively led to the last GFC. I don't necessarily know that what they've done here is going to lead to another horrific global financial crisis. I don't quite have my alarmism pants on yet, but suffice to say, it beggars belief that in this day and age, people can't pick up a history book.
What is the Silicon Valley Bank? Because it doesn't sound like a normal bank. You know, it's not like the National Australia Bank or Wells Fargo in the United States, which you know is a bank. But this one has got this Silicon Valley moniker at the head of it. So what is the Silicon Valley Bank?
So putting things to context. So in America, they have sectors in their stock market, obviously, in their economy that we don't even have in this country. Okay, so they've got aerospace, defence. They have a colossal tech sector. Okay, well, I think we have one tech stock that actually is of any size of any import. SVB was a bank in the legal term. It was the 16th largest bank in America. However, we would argue that that is pretty much where the similarities of what is a bank ends with SVB. It is a very, very particular business model that they've pursued as a result. And as you know, we run a global macro hedge fund. As a result of their actual geopolitical and cultural environment of where they were based. Okay, so
they were based in Silicon Valley, as opposed to another state or another area.
Yeah, so the headquarters was in, and I say headquarters because the UK operation of SVB got sold for £1 yesterday to HSBC. So the headquarters, Bear Stearns, anybody, Bueller. The headquarters in California are from in a place called Santa Clara, and of course Silicon Valley is the epicenter of billions and billions and billions of dollars of tech founder money. Okay, so let's drill into this. What is a bank? A bank is an institution that is regulated, that takes depositors' money in, and let's say just allow me a little bit of latitude here with the example. A depositor walks into a bank and the bank offers them 5% to deposit their funds. A normal bank takes that money, let's say it's $100, and it lends it out to one of its customers who wants a loan. And it lends that $100 that the depositor has just given them, and it lends it to the other person and charges them 7%. Okay, so this is how a normal bank works. Now, in Silicon Valley, and SVB in particular, it is the banker to the tech stars, shall we say. You know, they had Prince Harry and his puppeteer as clients. They've had Oprah Winfrey as clients. And you bet your bottom dollar that she wants her $600 million deposit guaranteed by the FDIC. The person comes into SVB, gives them the money, which probably has come from what we would deem a liquidity event. So that is when someone has started a tech company, they were living on 2-minute noodles previously, and all of a sudden overnight they're worth $2 billion. SVB takes their $2 billion, but a normal bank would then go and lend that out and originate product and originate home loans to other customers. But the problem is, in Silicon Valley, there aren't that many people who are worth $2 billion that need to actually get a home loan because they can pay cash for it. Now, again...
So the normal banking model is not what SVB was doing. It's not a normal bank at all.
It's not a normal bank in the same way that, let's say, in New York, if you had somebody who did an IPO, founder of a company, came up with a $2 billion windfall, went to invest it, he might only go and put in, I don't know, $50 million, $100 million of that $2 billion, but he would then go and invest the rest of that money somewhere else because that's what he knows what to do. He is an investor, right?
Yeah.
With these tech guys, as I say, they go from two-minute noodles to $2 billion overnight. And as we dig into the detail here, the corporate spaghetti, which is a very technical term, Steve, the corporate spaghetti that we're beginning to learn and discover in the last 2 days, as everybody all of a sudden becomes experts on SVB, sees that what SVB actually has done is it has created what we like to call a closed financial ecosystem. Right, so the deals that they will cut between the venture capital firm who provides seed or angel investment, then seed capital into a tech company, and then the tech founder ends up, as I say, minted with $2 billion. SVB had created an ecosystem here whereby they somehow managed to keep all of those assets, as we say, in-house. Right, so you've got like a capture kill area,
yes.
Where all of the deals, and they lock this up, the lawyers will lock this up in contracts, so that all of the money around from the genesis of the tech project to when they float the thing and it's worth billions of dollars, it all got tied into SVB. So some of these founders actually had to leave their money in SVB because it was part of the VC deal.
Okay. So it sounds like the bank was relying on 0% interest rates and, you know, the joys of quantitative easing that were happening in the United States ever since, 2008? You know, they're almost expecting nothing to change.
Yes, in a word, yes. The business model, as I said at the beginning, is alarmingly reminiscent of Lehman Brothers. And then again, as the UK pension fund system, the liability-driven investments, it's the same thing.
I've heard rumours that some of the previous principals or key figures in Lehman Brothers are also key figures in SVB. Is there any truth to this? I don't want you to name any names. Is there any truth to this rumour?
Oh, I'm happy to name names because it's public record, and I'm sure that they are going to appear in front of Congress at some time in the next 12 to 24 months, absolutely. The Chief Administrative Officer was formerly the CFO of the Capital Markets Division of Lehman Brothers. And other, you know, that's one bio that's actually hilarious to read, which I might add, they've completely scrubbed the website. So if you actually go to the website, it literally, there's almost nothing there apart from a few links to US Treasury and other legal disclaimers. And the Chief Risk Officer, Steve, this is one I found particularly amusing / alarming, is that the Chief Risk Officer at first glance seems very well qualified. She went to Harvard and did her undergraduate at University Santa Clara in California. But her undergrad degree was in political science, and her master's degree was in public administration.
So not in banking or finance?
Doesn't look like it to me, mate.
Right. This might sound like a dumb question, but what's a bank supposed to do? What would you and I here in Australia call a normal bank? Just in brief, what's a bank supposed to do? Borrow money and lend money out and make money when they do the process?
Yeah, the net interest margin is the split between what they borrow money at. So a depositor comes in, gives the bank money. The money that depositor gives the bank turns into a home loan, which it lends out to other people. And that is literally what Westpac, ANZ, CBA and NAB would be doing 5 days a week. What these guys did is that they took depositor money in and, thinking that interest rates would stay low for a very, very long time, instead of actually originating home loans, which, as I've described, in California, well, in Silicon Valley, there was no need for it, and they didn't want to go any further afield. Instead, they put those assets into super long duration, 20, 30, 50-year bonds. And, of course, as the English found out in September last year, inflation wasn't transitory. It bit very hard. The central banks were awoken from their slumber. Interest rates went up, up, up very, very quickly. Yeah. And these long-dated bonds got absolutely crucified. And in a nutshell, that is precisely what's happened to these guys. And it never should have happened to them in the first place if they were doing what a bank is supposed to do.
Well, let me jump in there, because when I read in the Financial Times and the Economist magazine, both the British publications, but they sort of say the problem is not enough regulation. They weren't being regulated enough. Do you want to sort of buy into that discussion?
That's not something that I will buy into for a moment, because I'm vehemently opposed not to regulation. I'm opposed to the viewpoint that when something blows up, everybody wants to put on a T-shirt that says, stupid's over there. After the GFC, which I worked through, not in this country, so I was actually at the epicentre of where it all went down. After the GFC, there was this wonderful piece of legislation enacted that started off at about 800 pages.
This is the Dodd-Frank bill in the United States.
So you clearly know where I'm going with this, yes. So the Dodd-Frank Act, which started off at 800 pages and ended up at a colossal 8,843 pages, a number that has been seared into my memory, it hasn't been able to stop what happened here. And that's not where the funny, not funny tail ends, that the Frank component of the Act, Barney Frank, I'm not sure of the legal status of the bank, but Signature Bank, which failed yesterday, which was shut down yesterday, Barney Frank has been a director of that bank since 2015. I mean, you can't script this, mate.
This has all got weird echoes of that movie that you and I once saw called The Big Short. You know, there's got this strange reminiscences of history repeating itself, Marcel von Pfeiffer.
I had no problems with the acting capabilities of both Margot Robbie and Selena Gomez and their ability to present what a collateralised debt obligation was to the audiences. But, the problem here is that we just keep seeing the same movie, pardon the pun, repeat itself over and over again. And I go back to the point that SVB, if it had actually operated as a bank is intended to operate, this could not have actually happened. And the problem here is that the irony, or rather the the dichotomy of what's happening, people are concerned about a bank run, okay? Which is literally Western civilization's greatest fear, to be quite frank, just before war. The problem is people are looking down the precipice of a bank run occurring in small rural type community banks, you know, like in summer in the middle of Idaho or summer in Kentucky or something like that. Those guys have actually done nothing wrong. They have behaved exactly like a bank is supposed to behave. It is the dichotomy here is that the guys who were the banks behaving badly are the uber rich, typically left leaning tech biased companies that have stood behind SVB and are inextricably a component of the SVB ecosystem in Silicon Valley. They are the guys who have done the wrong thing, and the bank run is now spreading to the second tier. So our fear is that you're going to end up with a two-tiered banking system in America. People are already pulling their money out of smaller banks, but the problem is those banks were paying 4% interest to mum and dad depositors. Those people are terrified of a bank run, so they're pulling their deposits and moving them to Chase or to, you know, to JP Morgan, and they're getting 0.5%, right? So the FDIC has said we're going to, again, the word backstop is a furphy. What's happening here is a bailout. So let's not get our terminologies politically correct. Mm-hmm. This is a bailout. Mm-hmm. The guys who are being bailed out don't deserve to be bailed out. They don't need to be. Oprah Winfrey has $600 million, apparently, with SVB. And I'm sorry, not sorry, but I have no sympathy for her whatsoever.
Probably worthwhile mentioning that listeners here in Australia may not realise your reference to sort of left-leaning is that in Silicon Valley, that's where the Democrats' big funding support comes from politically. They're the big donors to the left of politics in the United States is the Silicon Valley thing. So it's perhaps not surprising that Joe Biden, a Democrat, is looking after his base politically.
Yeah, I mean, I hearken back to the example I cited earlier, the fact that you've got a the member of Congress, Barney Frank, like literally who actually enacted that piece of legislation, the Wall Street Reform Act post-GFC. He was a Democrat, and oh look, he now has a job, or has, not sure of the tense, at a bank in Silicon Valley that has just failed. So, again, someone asked the question, someone being Klevasnes, who is, for the listeners who may be aware, runs AQR, and I'm not kidding when I say he would be one of the top 10 smartest guys in finance on this planet. And he posed the question yesterday, purposefully inflammatory, to say, I wonder if the response from the Biden administration would have been different had the bank that was going under, as in SVB, been located in Florida or Texas. Now, I smile inwardly at this type of provocation, because the reality is that I know very well, as does he, that the banks in Florida and Texas don't do what the banks in what this bank demonstrably has done in California. It's a different business model.
All right, whether it's a backstop or a bailout, either way, Joe Biden has said, you know, we're going to, it's that you're not going to lose anything. No one's going to get hurt here. So I have to ask the question that I asked you years back after the global financial crisis, when the movie The Big Short came out. What happened to moral hazard? I mean, if you, you know, otherwise, no one's learnt anything. It's quite clear that no one's learnt anything, because it's always the taxpayer bailing out the super rich again. This is the super rich Democrats, the super rich funders of the Democrats. What happened to moral hazard in banking, Marcel von Pfeiffer?
Yeah, as soon as you saw some of the depositor lists of the clients of SVB, we knew immediately that this thing was not going to, like, that the FDIC would guarantee all their money, right? Which is a, from a,
so the Oprah Winfrey's of the world, the wealthiest, you know, top 1% in the United States.
Yep, yep. Biden was not going to throw them under the bus for a moment. The problem that we have here is there is colossal moral hazard on display. You are quite right. They have demonstrably learnt absolutely precisely nothing since 2008. And the problem with moral hazard is that when it rears its head, you need to take the head off the snake immediately. And it was just with great dismay that I saw Larry Summers yesterday come out and say that this is not the time to talk about moral hazard. First and foremost, we must keep the depositors safe. Now, again, at a certain altruistic...
Meaning we must keep Democrat donors safe.
I'm about 104% sure that's what Larry meant. So Larry saying that this is not the time to talk about moral hazard, for me, is a wonderful litmus test of the appetite that the people in positions of power display. Because if this is not the time to actually tackle moral hazard, when is? So what needs to be done right now is that these people who have pretended to be bankers, and again, Steve, don't get me wrong, I have no love for bankers. You know, in finance, we are very siloed, shall we say. I run a hedge fund, and I have no love for bankers particularly. But these guys weren't bankers. They were people masquerading as bankers. They were capitalising, not to be confused with a capitalist, but they were capitalising on the premise that the Federal Reserve would keep quantitative easing and the low interest rate environment, which had allowed their business model to flourish with great success for a number of years, right up until it didn't. And as the old quote about bankruptcy goes, so tell me, how did you become bankrupt? And the guy goes, well, at first it was gradually and then it was suddenly. So these business models work very well until they don't. But yeah, like you say, they have learnt nothing, and all I can do is wait for the inevitable cries from the peanut gallery to say, if there was more regulation, this would have been preventable.
One final question. You see the date of March 2020 as being indicative of what's happened in the last, 36, 72 hours. Why?
Steve, in addition to the GFC and the tech crash, both of which I bore witness to because I was working at the time, I was working in Geneva in March 2020, and when Powell...
Jerome Powell.
J. Powell, as he's affectionately known, When Powell and the Treasury opened what we call the sluice gates, the dam gates, to, inverted commas, rescue the world, or as they would like to say, provide all accommodative monetary policy support, blah, blah, blah. For us, we looked at what they were flooding the markets with. We didn't think it was necessary at the time. We said that the end result of this would be very unpleasant inflation. We were marked as pariahs for about 18 months by most financial commentators, definitely every single politician and every central banker that walked the planet, who persisted in referring to inflation as being transitory. We all know who won that argument. And
congratulations.
Thank you. Well, my investors thanked us as well, which was lovely. So the problem with March 2020 is that they attempted to fix a medical problem with monetary policy. All they succeeded in doing was expanding the monetary base. And my fear here, what the FDIC does, and so for the listeners, the FDIC is the US government body that protects every depositor's bank accounts in the US up to $250,000, very similar to what they have in this country. Yesterday, they basically said, we will now do FDIC infinite. So what that means, to your point, to your question, Steve, what that means is that the FDIC is going to make Oprah whole for her $600 million at the taxpayer's expense. The FDIC is also, if they run out of money, if there are too many Oprahs in too many tech-based Silicon Valley, California banks that go under who aren't really banks because their business model is fatally flawed, then the FDIC will go with begging bowl in hand to the Treasury. The Treasury will give the FDIC as much money as they want, because that's what the administration has told them to do last night as President Biden delivered his missive. And as a client said to me yesterday, well, how much money can the Treasury actually give the FDIC if this does become a banking run and every depositor in the US is in serious trouble? And I said to him, I said, it's all good. The Treasury has a buyer of last resort. The Federal Reserve will buy whatever debt the Treasury needs to issue in order to fund the FDIC. What happens when the Federal Reserve, if it has to buy all this extra debt that the Treasury will have to issue to save the depositors of America, most of which haven't actually done the wrong thing, that will create more money supply, larger Fed balance sheet, which means that we'll have more inflation, and Jerome Powell, who I'm forecasting will have a nervous breakdown probably by about June of this year, he will be left with probably the most unenviable job since Arthur Burns was the head of the Federal Reserve in the 1970s. And I pray to God that he doesn't make the same mistake that Arthur Burns did, but I suspect that he will.
That's Marcel von Pfeiffer. Marcel von Pfeiffer is the Chief Investment Officer of Arminius Capital ALPS Fund, a hedge fund.
Steve Austin on ABC Radio Brisbane.